Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to our newest episode of The Bad Batch Report, where we are covering episode 8 of The Bad Batch Reunion. I am Marie-Claire Gould, your host, and with me, as always for all of these episodes, is...
That guy you sleep next to.
Occasionally. Kyle Gould.
That's me, everyone, Kyle.
Yeah.
Coming here live to once again tell you... how terrible the titles are of these episodes. Good God.
You do certainly, you are the biggest critic of the titles of the episodes. I feel like they had them written out beforehand and then wrote the episodes and they're like, well, we'll just keep the titles. But first, I want to say thank you for all the listener feedback.
Oh, yes. There was so much listener feedback the last week here.
It's funny when you ask for listener feedback.
I'm like, I have questions. Do you have answers? And they did.
They did have answers.
Wow. A little bit of it is actually addressed during the episode itself today, too.
Yeah.
Which was neat. So let's kick things off with the top.
Yeah. General impressions of a reunion.
Yeah. I still hate that title.
It was a reunion of sorts.
This episode goes so fast.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
The pace is just, everyone is rushing. It's frenetic. I loved every single moment of it. My favorite episode so far of everything. It hits all of the notes I want it to hit because it leads to something greater. Something bigger is happening. And if this isn't an episode in exclusion.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's certainly hinting at the meta plot, right? So people trying to find Omega are those people that want to capture her from the cloning facility. Oh, maybe not. We don't know, right? The episode beats the characterization, the conflict, the stakes for this episode, the animation, the music, the everything about this episode was off the charts good.
Yep.
And first and foremost, I just want to thank Christian Taylor for hitting all of the story beats so well. This episode was everything I wanted.
Yep.
And he has written, he also wrote Cornered, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote both of those episodes and has a long history production and writing wise, and is a blonde haired cutie. If you go look at his picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good to know. A little writer crush there, eh?
I do. I like smart people.
This episode is just, they use the scenery and the setting so well. The ship that they're stuck on has foundational impact on the episode itself. Like, it has a part to play.
It is a character.
It's not just a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Much like the Star Destroyer in Revenge of the Sith at the top of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And the physicality around it and the knowledge and the sort of cat and mouse game that is being played as they like navigate things. Cause like we get a lot of, you know, we're doing X because they won't guess. And then, you know, there's an oppositional like strategy applied to that. Yep. And then they have to adapt to that. And you can clearly see how it was mapped out. And yet it all feels like a surprise and fresh and new as the episode unfolds. And so, like, bravo.
Yeah.
That's all.
My only criticism, though, is, gosh, it makes Hunter look dumb.
Yeah, for a leader. Yeah.
There should have at least been a couple levels of sub-guessing. Like, it's Crosshair they're going up against. Crosshair knows that Tech can tap into their comms.
Yeah.
Crosshair's going to call them to go do something. Hunter should have realized Crosshair knows our playbook, but he just runs on rote with the playbook.
Yeah.
And then the highlight moment, the disappointing moment I found of the duel, which was just so brilliantly and beautifully scored. I just felt that Western. Every time Cad Bane walks in, you get that the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because even the voice actor who plays Cad Bane has said that he's pulling deliberately from a specific character in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly for his performance of Cad Bane. I just felt like that duel was disappointing.
I think it made sense with where the characters are at that he had to be defeated very easily. And yeah, I immediately after finishing the episode, actually before even finishing, as soon as Cad Bane showed up on screen, I took a picture of him and I sent him to our good friend Jeremy, who is like the biggest Cad Bane stan. Like, you got him the Funko Pop.
Yeah, the New York Comic Con exclusive. Yeah. I think there's only like 300 of them
made
Cad Bane Funko Pop.
Because he's that big of a fan, and he made a joke, which I cannot repeat on air. But he was like, well, damn it, now I need to watch The Bad Batch. Because he wasn't. Like, he was like, I'm just not invested in what the story is. And, you know, this is how they get back. Like, this is how they bring you back in, is with your favorite characters showing up in
Did
shows.
You know, and you may already know this, and you listeners out there may know this too, but you might not, that when Clone Wars was canceled, what ended up on the cutting room floor for the next season was supposed to be a 4-episode arc of Cad Bane and Boba Fett going to Tatooine and saving a kid.
Wow.
A 4-episode arc, basically a feature movie of those two as your central characters.
That's wacky.
I know, right?
Considering that, and I wanted to bring this up with like the character, so we can go into Cad Bane's character a little bit right now, but Cad Bane is only known for stealing children.
Right.
He's basically like Saint Nicholas, who like puts bad children into his bag.
Yep.
And steals them away.
Yep.
What the hell? This is all he's known for. And it's getting a little creepy, Star Wars. So
he even calls himself out on it when he's talking to Sidious, and he says, stealing force sensitive kids, isn't that kind of beneath you?
Yeah, exactly. But like, that's all he's known for.
The best bounty hunter in the world, well, in the galaxy.
And also huts, because he also breaks out huts too. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Corey Burton plays Cad Bane, and he has been Cad Bane since the start of the Clone Wars. And Seth Green plays Toto.
Yes.
Who, as soon as I heard him talk, he's like one of my favorite droids because he gets destroyed in one season of Clone Wars. And I'm just so happy that they have this, like, Cad Bane and Toto have this, like, amazing relationship. And I hope that we get more of their interactions, even though Toto's hurt. Their relationship is very like bickering couple, and I live for that droid bounty hunter like relationship. It's so good, and I hope that Omega befriends Toto. I have like built entire story plot headline or headcanons around what I think is gonna happen next. So,
but I found Toto's like the more murderous and duplicitous than Cad Bane is. Like,
I know they're bad, but they bicker, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toto's like, why do you listen to these children?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's something building with the Omega stuff where she's like able to turn even the harshest people into softies. So we might get a little bit of that in the future. I don't want to speculate too much because I'm just fairly happy to go along for the ride with this.
Fair.
But there is sort of this reintroduction of femininity and caring and compassion and stuff like that that is happening through her character.
Also, like, a lot more female stormtroopers women coded stormtroopers, because all three of the non-clone troopers, stormtroopers that are there, since the fourth guy, the guy, is dead, the other three are all women.
Huh. Interesting.
Yep.
Just femme voices, yeah.
And all three of them are women actors, and like, none of them have much in the way of voice acting cred. It's interesting, and they're all like different people of color and minority races. It's really neat to see.
Yeah, this show is doing a lot to speak to diversity of thought and experience in the writing room and then in the production. And Star Wars, you said you were going to do it, and I'm really, really happy that you actually are. Thank you.
Dang it, I didn't write down her name or her number either. It's like ES-204 or something like that.
Yeah.
402. 401 is the one that's dead, and 402, 403, and 404 are all the ones still there, whatever those numbers were. And all three of them featured in this, with the flamethrower one doing her work and the other one with the Gatling gun confronting them and then getting the call. It was really well done.
So let's dig into scenes.
There are 27 of them.
Oh my gosh. That's a lot. But it didn't feel that way because we were kind of always staying quite along with the action.
Yeah. There's a lot of cutbacks. So there's two concurrent things happening throughout. There is the Kaminoans leading to Crosshair and then Crosshair's piece that's going on.
Kind of his perspective, yeah.
And then we've got our Bad Batch doing their bit.
Yeah.
And when we don't get the Crosshair part, we get the tech part.
Yeah.
When he splits off from Wrecker to go and do his piece of getting the valuable things.
Yeah. Shout out to you and this podcast.
Me.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Being like, we need Crosshair's perspective.
True.
And guess what? We got it.
Yeah, we did.
We did. It was great.
And poor Crosshair.
High fives.
Yeah, distance high five.
Distance high five. We're across the table. No, you've been spot on with so many solid things with the show so far.
Close to.
Yeah.
Okay, so this seems like a great point to bring up. What is the most important part of this episode that leads to the future?
Ooh, I love it.
Because I think you, the listener, and you, Marie Claire, may very well say, well, it's Cad Bane taking Omega, right? Because is going to get returned to the Kaminoans.
If the Kaminoans are the persons that have been asking for her, he could have a different person that is interested in her.
Right.
Yep.
So is the most important thing that happened as a result of this episode, is it the loss of Omega from the group? Because I would say it isn't. That isn't the most important piece of this episode.
I mean, so generally speaking, separations are where people grow apart from each other and on their own and establish their own independence of thought and add new things into things. So this is really an important piece for Omega, but it is, I would actually say that I was expecting a separation at this or in the next two episodes.
Right. Well, that's an important plot device for that to happen, but I don't think that that's the most important piece of this.
Okay. What is the most important piece
arc?
I
don't think it's Crosshair getting hurt either, because he's really badly hurt.
I've never seen anybody as bandaged / had like a thing except for Luke.
Vadered up, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very Vader. Yeah.
The breathing apparatus and everything. Because I think he probably melted his lungs.
Oh, God.
Because he breathed in the fumes from the ion engine.
Yeah.
Like, I think those other two guys, they're not in my death count as being dead, but I'm pretty sure the other two guys died that were on that ledge.
Straight into the back to tank for you, Crosshair.
Exactly. Further, I don't think it's Hunter getting hurt, but it is interesting, and I'm only thinking about this now, is that there is this balance. Crosshair is hurt, and so too is Hunter.
Yeah, because they're all family, and they're all one.
Because they are connected. Yeah. And I didn't even think about the fact that they'll both be healing up next episode. They'll be...
Hopefully we see like some sort of aftermath with Crosshair.
And to add to that, to even further push out my point... What a new and unique perspective to get from at the end of the episode when Hunter wakes up and we are literally behind Hunter's eyes.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was so neat.
It was. We haven't seen a lot of in-helmet perspective in Star Wars, and that was a good choice.
Yeah, and I thought it was brilliant. Like, he's alive. That was our first piece to that element. Okay, so here it is. And then you can go back to your notes because you have lots. It's the information that tech pulls out of the databank.
I thought that was really smart. Because that's the same thing that happened with like R2, and that led him to knowing pretty much about the Empire and all of the plans of the Empire for forever.
Forever.
Forever. So, yes. That was smart. Yeah.
On two levels. One, they weren't going to be able to carry out as much as they wanted to.
Yeah.
Right. They needed to pull out some money out of this.
And information is king.
He lost his photon missile, which thankfully didn't explode. So I'm going to assume that person isn't dead, that they just got taken out.
He just got hurt by it. Yeah.
Oh, it was she. It was the girl with the flamethrower.
Wrecker, like, hugging and kissing the photon missile was just...
It was the same colors as he wears.
I know. It's just so cute. like, okay, we get it.
He has his baby.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, so we've got that, and they weren't able to take all of the things out. And then they had to use a bunch of the explosive grenades and whatnot to separate the canister of the engine's exhaust port to free themselves from their predicament, which was so beautifully done and so cool. And I would love it if I was able to ever to able to come up with that sort of thing in an actual play game that I was running, where I was like, oh, and this happened. Like, that's just so well thought.
It's very
out.
Dramatic. And then, like, you know, it's
and
sort of
visual.
Like it was a severing symbolically. And that's like why Crosshair got so hurt as a result of all of the things that had happened. Because quite literally, like, they severed the relationship with him. And so it'll have to, like, you know, Campbell would say Crosshair and Hunter are now wounded because of what happened. It was his idea. Crosshair got wounded because of this. They're going to have to heal together eventually.
Yeah. This metaphor is exhausting.
There was something about the coating of the inside of the ion engine. It's like, this is tech wanted to go on about it, and to me that's going to be important in the future. It's just
I don't think it
was a side thing.
Yep.
But like, to me, it's going to be a thing. They're going to pull back.
Maybe, though, that it's an add-on, because they're just saying, oh, you know what? Tech doesn't have as much character as we really want him to have. He's kind of the voice of the plot in many ways.
He's like, by the way, this is what will happen with these things.
And now we have to go here next. Like, okay, cool. Yeah, thank you, Tech. You're here to make sure we're on path. And in this instance here, it was great. I almost feel sometimes that Tech is like an NPC character, like a non-player character at the table.
That's played by the GM.
The GM is playing, and the GM is like, and now we will go forward. And then finally, the player of record's like, shut up already!
Yeah.
But I want more Tech-related development, and we got that with the Omega scene where he's in the bridge.
I would say that this episode also did a lot to drive from the things that Omega was getting involved in and learning. So every time sort of a person was kind of in charge of a plan or an action. So Wrecker's like, I'm teaching Omega how to disarm bombs. Okay, I'm going in to go get bombs. Omega's there pressing a button. Tech is on the bridge doing stuff. Omega is helping. Hunter is executing the bomb plan. Omega is the one that's on top getting the little thing.
Yep.
That is the cycle of how they view Omega, as like almost like the linchpin between all of them. And it was executed so well in this episode. Also, she reminds me a lot of Jungkook from BTS because she is learning all of these things that all of their older brothers are good at. And so they end up being able to be, you know, as good or even better at all of those things. Like, Jungkook is good at dancing, good at singing, good at rapping, good at art, good at speaking. Like, he's got all of that because he's learned kind of from all of his older brothers in BTS.
And he gets to learn all those things in exclusion. He's not subjected to anything else in the world that he has to then go and learn as well.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, and he has amazing mentors within his own group. And to me, that just sort of reminds me of Omega. It's like, well, she's learning how to do stuff with Tech, and she's learning how to do stuff with Wrecker, and she's learning how to do stuff with Hunter, and she's learning how to do stuff with Echo. She's getting all of these different aspects as like these personal people who are giving her all of these tools for success in the future.
Yep.
So even though Cad Bane might think, oh, hey, I've caught this little girl, I think he's got another thing coming.
Maybe. I want to know where Boba is, though. That's my question.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
Crosshair is a commander now. So that was a rather swift elevation in the ranks for him, since I don't even think he was a captain.
Ah, yeah.
And he's not called Crosshair anymore. He's called by his
designation.
Clone designation, which is so impersonal.
The chase scenes themselves were executed so well. The cat and mouse of it all, like, oh, hey, they're avoiding the choke points, and then we see where they end up. Just awesome from an execution perspective.
Absolutely.
What do you think Plan 7 was?
I don't know what Plan 7 was. It was really funny. That was a nice little segue of inter-character. These characters have history together. They have done a whole bunch of different things together, and Plan 7 is not a good idea in this card.
I feel like it involves a boulder.
Probably.
That's a go-to move for Wrecker, as we have seen.
Absolutely a go-to move. I also loved the beginning of the episode with the Kaminoans, because they are pure capitalists. When they have a problem and they can't solve it, they spend money to fix it. And if it still remains a problem, what do? They throw even more money at it.
Yes. Look, we have lots of money.
We hired this bounty hunter. You know what? That's not good enough. We're going to have to upgrade it. We're going to go to the best bounty hunter in the world. We're going to hire that guy.
Yeah.
They probably got his number from Sidious anyway.
Is it time for Death Count?
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you want to talk Death Count, we can move right into Death Count,
or any of the big scenes that, you know, there was a lot of death and destruction. But to me, it flowed so easily that it's hard to like walk the whole thing and say, well, you know, first they made a plan and then they changed that plan and then they adapted that plan. And then, you know, Crosshair realized what they were doing. I really appreciated they're jamming our communications because they know we're here. That was a really good point.
There was a lot of action, reaction, 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 reaction in this.
Yeah. It seemed very logical from a progression perspective. And yet also like,
which is how 27 tight. Scenes feels like. No time whatsoever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Literally, when it ended, I was like, oh, it's over?
Yeah. It was a longer episode than normal. It was 25 minutes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So Death Count is easy.
Okay.
If you would like to bring it in.
Sure. This is the Bad Batch report. We are going to Kyle Gould with our death count.
We're on Bracca, and there's been a destruction of a disassembled ship. Someone has managed to turn it on. We were able to get our three scrapper guild members free. They'd only been stunned. Even the guy that fell off the cliff was pulled back by the Bad Batch and put with his comrades. Unfortunately, we've found 9 bodies, and those are the ones we actually saw killed on screen.
You're right, yeah.
Cad Bane took care of 12, but because they were just laying there, not really as dramatic. It's unlikely that he did, but we don't see any scorch marks on them. We don't see any visible wounds. They're just a bunch of bodies laying on the ground.
Yeah.
And those 9 all die right after the standoff when they cue the cannon to explode, the gun to fire. The gun actually takes out 2 guys. Wrecker throws one off the cliff, and I'm assuming that guy didn't make it because that was a long fall. They weren't willing to jump it. So, and then, yeah, only 9 this entire episode, which is, still, I think you might have thought it was more.
I thought it was more. Still less than Clone Wars, right? Generally speaking, how many people die or how many clones or droids would die in an episode.
Yep. Yeah. Person to person conflict, though, once again. And so I think that they're trying to make sure that it is toned down, given that these are people and they have.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that's the direction that they're leading into, more injuries or more stuns, etc. Which is, I mean, kind of nice for me personally.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some of the thematic elements that were presented in this episode. We had raised the query with some of our listenership about you know, leaving the military and how this show seems to be playing into life after the military, and almost in so many ways this episode actually answered some of those thematic things.
I don't know if it answered it, but at
least continued the conversation.
The clones themselves, our Bad Batch, are finally recognizing that at this point in their lives, if they don't come away with something to repay Sid with, they will continue to fall down this debt cycle.
Yeah.
And they need a big score in order to break free of it.
Yeah.
So I wrote down this statement: what choices do ex-military have after leaving the military? And that is something that is facing our Bad Batch more and more and more.
Yeah.
And I posed that question last week and I've had 3 different people now reach out to me via Twitter and email and other contact way, mostly Twitter and email. I don't know why I said other contact ways. Like, it's really just those two ways.
Yeah.
And they talked to me about how the fact that there is, in fact, a required course that once your end
is... We're talking about the U.S. military,
yeah,
specifically.
U.S. Army only. Yeah. I did not get here from anybody else. But I would assume that this is the case across the board, that there is a required course that you are obligated to take before you are discharged from the military, from the Army especially. And it's called, wanting to call it TAC, but it's about transition.
Yeah.
And it's how to transition from the military into
civilian life.
Yeah. Life. And what it, but it doesn't help. It's like a Band-Aid over an open wound, really, because it talks about resume writing, but it doesn't give you any of the necessary skill sets that you would need to have to be a fully functional autonomous adult.
Yeah.
Paying rent, paying electrical bills,
making your own food,
that's not just part of it. So yeah. a lot of military people actually move back in with their parents or loved ones or the girlfriend or boyfriend significant other. Those people then generally rely heavily on those people. And if you do not have
a support person
to move back in with or to help you learn to adult.
Yeah.
That's not fair because they have definitely learned many significant skills in the military. They just don't learn civilian skills. and there are not enough resources and not-for-profits and groups out there that are getting in touch with ex-military people. So we've said, go serve your country.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, we give you your plaque or your badges or your buttons and your flag and off you go. Congratulations. Thanks for all your service. But what happens is that when you think about vets and veteran needs and how many vets we have in the homeless population, I used to always think that those were like older people from the war, in quotation marks, who were suffering from PTSD and weren't able to adjust to, you know, civilian life. But it's actually... a preponderance of them are the people who have just left the military and they wind up with a debt that they can't pay because they haven't been able to get a job because their military skills
haven't equated or aren't immediately transferable or they need to figure out how to work through it. Yeah,
exactly. And so your military skills might land you the job, but because you are codified and regimented in your thinking from the military, it's actually very hard for them to personally interact with their coworkers,
right?
Because their coworkers are coming at it from a very different perspective. And I know this because my coworker was hired at the same time as me, Phil. Let's call him Phil. He came directly from the British military, and for the first 6 months to 3 years of working with Phil, we constantly took bets on when we thought this was going to be the last straw and he was going to quit, because he just could not, like, if an email came in, he wanted to know the procedures upon which to respond to it. If there was a meeting, he was always there 5 minutes before the meeting started. And if anyone showed up any time after the 0 hour of the meeting's start, he was very disgruntled with those people. Like, he was just so regimented in his thinking and in his approach to processes and procedures that it was very hard for him to interact with his fellow coworkers. Now, Grant, thankfully, that started to break down for him over time.
Yeah.
And he fortunately had the job, had the girlfriend, and that he was able to thrive for, and we worked together for the next decade. But it was, I just seeing that one example and then wondering, like, Phil never saw active service. He was a clerk, right? He definitely went to war zones and whatnot, but he was not out there in a ATV with a gun in hand trying to make sure that insurgents were not, you know, penetrating lines. I can't even imagine what that would be like for someone who went from that skill set to come back our world here and try to adapt to live in it.
Yeah.
And this show is showing us just how hard that is.
I mean, it really is summarized with Echo's line, like, Hunter, we were soldiers. What else is there?
Yeah.
Like,
why didn't we go with Rex?
Yeah. Why didn't we why didn't we continue to fight a war? Because Star Wars is telling us, and here's the key thing about this show and why I'm so happy to be along in this journey, even though I'm like, why was this show necessary? And this episode, I'm finally understanding it,
yeah,
is because Star Wars is saying there is story in the Star Wars galaxy after war. That's what they're saying. They're saying there is more to this universe than the Star Wars.
You mean there's stars in the Star Wars?
Exactly. And it's the transitional time that I've always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I'm so happy about this show. Are you allowed to shout out the people that have spoken?
I don't remember their names.
Okay.
And I don't have my phone on me to pull them up.
Okay.
How about we shout them out next week? And if anybody else has any, because I asked a bunch of questions of, yeah, these people, and a bunch of them responded. I didn't have too many questions because I just wanted to know more about their experiences.
Yeah, you wanted to know what it felt like and how this is resonating with them. Did they feel like this show was resonating with them?
Yes.
Oh, good.
A lot of people have definitely felt that resonance with their former military service as well. And a lot of people in the military are watching Clone Wars and Bad Batch. Not a small populace in the group of people who love Star Wars.
Yeah. It's so thoughtful. And, you know, thank you, whoever you are. I blame Kyle for not bringing his phone downstairs. No. But thank you for reaching out. And if we shout out other things, like, I'm just, like, not the person to respond to people. But shout out at Kyle, at Tavern Tales DM on Twitter, or there's a contact form on whattheforce.ca. If you want to just give us any sort of feedback, that's great. We will bring it up on air as we're talking about the show, because I actually think what is being said, I really struggled with the why of this show, mm-hmm, early on, and
yeah,
when it
too
was announced.
We talked about that a ton. I was like, why?
Why? Why? But if this is it, which I think it is, and they've gotten to it halfway through the first season, yes, this is what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And love.
Love and compassion and growing within yourself. And
We need the Martez sisters to come back for...
Oh, the Hunter...
Rafter? Some rafter love.
Some rafter love. Love in the rafters. No, we ship it. We ship it hard, yeah.
Yes.
No, we do. I like when we get more interactions with people and they kind of build over time, and that's super fun. Yeah.
Yeah. This episode gives me hope for this show and for Star Wars in general.
This production crew,
yeah,
the writing room that was obviously involved because of how many writers are involved, how things are structured, how they all link together, how they're building on each other.
Yep.
I tweeted out today on my personal account, let's make this the standard for Star Wars. I think that Mandalorian, especially season 2, suffered from a lack of a writer's room because it was primarily written by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. And
Jon Favreau, who just does an excellent turn on Friends as Monica's boyfriend, the billionaire tech guru. Like, he literally is Tony Stark in Friends.
I know.
It's so funny.
It's really funny. And yeah. Yeah. We're watching that occasionally as our teen is working their way through all of the Friends episodes.
Oh my god, there's so many dirty jokes that our son just does not get.
I know.
I was like, did you know why that was funny? No, that was dumb. Yeah, I'm glad for that, bud. You're only 9.
Yeah. But yeah, Jon Favreau being on there, I told them, hey, that's Happy from Iron Man.
Yeah.
And they said, Mom, that's Happy from Spider-Man. Ugh. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They connected so much more with Spider-Man than they did.
Oh, no. I mean, it's of their generation. They, yeah, saw it in the theaters, whereas Iron Man, they weren't born when Iron Man came out. So.
No.
Close
enough, but not yet.
Yeah. But in general, like, the storytelling, having more voices in the room, having more perspectives in the room, but also being able to layer these things because people are thinking in all of the different variety and areas.
Right.
That's the key to having a writer's room. So please make this the standard for Star Wars going forward.
It's brilliant. Dave Filoni has entrusted Jennifer Corbett with a vision. She has a vision. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. She then has worked with this group of writers to put that vision to life. And working with more people, if you have people in the room, more brains means quicker turnaround times for scripts and for ideas, mm-hmm. but also more ideas in the room.
And also catching all of the different angles by which the show can go. And so, like, we're like, okay, these episodes are still set up until, like, I was more patient with it, I think, than you were.
Ugh,
but,
so frustrated.
But, you know, there's definitely... You know, they're laying the groundwork. These things are important. There's setup happening. But now we're getting the payoff of the story. I still think there's going to be a little bit of the episode of the week occasionally put in there. But like Rebels, like Resistance, no singular episode is unimportant. There's always something that they're learning or knowing or is going to come back, right? And you do that better with more voices and more perspectives looking at the story. So make writing rooms standard for Star Wars. Thank you. This has been my TED Talk.
There's been another casualty in the...
There's been a murder at Lucasfilm. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I think that's true. Also, we're not going to see filler episodes of TV shows going forward. I think that that is a thing of the past.
Because of episode numbers that they were renewed for or whatever. Like, hey, we have to make these 22 or 24 episodes.
Yeah.
And so
because
there was
this,
like,
is the, this yeah. is the play cycle. This is the, we need yeah. an episode on this Thursday at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
We need an episode every Thursday on, you know, for this next 23 weeks in order to meet our schedule yeah. for our shows. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Shows are on demand. So why would you put a filler episode into a TV show that might be the episode that somebody then says, it's not for me anymore, and walks away from? Because we see that happen all the time in TV.
Yeah.
And in programs we're watching, we're like, and I'm done.
And I'm done.
And you don't want that filler episode
no.
to be the, and I'm done. And
for the streaming service.
Because no.
like sometimes people just join for a particular show. Like the amount of people that I had who joined for Mandalorian, cut off their subscription, and then came back for WandaVision.
Yep.
And then like left and now are back for Loki.
They're just gonna pay for the content they want to view.
Exactly.
Watch it
and, so
and then turn it off.
Yeah. I do wanna have a quick conversation about the Disney Plus strategy of having what seems like Star Wars on Fridays and Marvel on Wednesdays, because mm-hmm. they said that they're really, really happy with the Marvel Wednesdays, because I think what they're thinking about is that Marvel movies are going to start coming out on Fridays, and so they don't want to conflict that with Marvel audiences,
yeah.
which is fascinating, because like Mandalorian moved its schedule around Tross.
Well, did you note a Pixar film launched today?
I
didn't
know.
Even know it was coming.
I
and
saw
it's on
a little
Disney Plus.
Feedback and from what I've read, the Pixar execs are like really pissed off with how things are just launching straight to Disney Plus and not getting a chance to be in theaters. And they're like, we're being treated like a second class company within.
Well, you are,
you know, well, I mean, Pixar is what held Disney up for so many years. Like they held them like Cars and, you know, like Up and all of these other franchises that quite literally held them in place.
But they were internal. They spun them out. They brought them back.
I know.
So they're definitely a second class citizen in the Disney umbrella. Mm. And that umbrella is really big now. So I'm sorry, Pixar, if you're not our favorite child, we have a lot of children and a lot of mouths to feed.
And some of them have been adopted, like Marvel, but Marvel's making us lots of money. And some of them have been adopted, like Star Wars, and Star Wars makes us lots of money.
And now they have to look at all of their Fox stuff and all of the Star stuff that
Star
they've
stuff,
just pulled
yeah.
in. And National Geographic, like, they don't want to lose any of these IPs. and continue to maintain the profitability of them. So yeah, I'm sorry, Pixar. You're just one mouth to feed. So at the end of the day, I'm excited and ecstatic to go and watch another Pixar film. And I cannot wait to have time with the family to watch that, because I know that that's going to be an event film. It's like popcorn and floats. That's what that'll be as soon as my show is done.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's smart to release things to Disney Plus, because people are going to pay the subscription fee to go there, you know? But I think that what they want is like, back to the theaters. I don't know how long it's going to take to recover from the theaters. George Lucas famously was quoted that there's going to be some sort of problem in the 90s. Like, he quoted in the 90s, he's like, there's going to be something that's going to disrupt the theaters, and then it's going to cost like $60 to go to a movie theater per person, and it'll be like live theater. Yeah. I'm like, oh god, okay.
But with flat screen technology and cinema sound being mm-hmm. available in people's homes at a fraction of the cost that it cost like 30 years ago, if you wanted what you could have in your basement theater room today, it was going to cost you $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Today it costs you $3,000, and that's like an 80 plus inch HD 5K TV and the stereo sound. Mm-hmm. Like, you're already getting your cinema experience with your basement theater or your just living room theater TV show.
Yeah.
With on Disney Plus, because they're streaming at such high resolutions.
Like, when I was growing up, my dad was a lawyer, and so knew people who had like lots and lots of money. And the thing that he knew was like, hey, going to those people's houses, they could get theater releases directly to their homes.
Yep.
Like via like satellite and stuff yeah. like that. And that's been technology that has been around for a very long time. And now we're finally getting that experience.
Yeah. The only thing we're missing is the movie theater popcorn. But hey, on Amazon for under $200, you can get a movie theater popcorn maker.
Yeah. I still like going to the theater.
Maybe one day I'll eventually get to buy one of those. But so far, I've gotten turned down every time I try to click add to cart.
No. Okay. So before we get too far, are there
right.
any questions that we want to ask of our audience? Because I'm really liking this dialogue.
Well, here's what I want to know. When Clone Wars first came out, it was released as a cinematic movie event.
We went together.
I know, right? That was, we caught the train, we walked over, we sat in the theater.
We were young kids still in university.
Yeah, like 20 years ago almost. Hey. It was amazing.
I think it was 2004.
Can or will Disney do an animated Star Wars movie again? Is that going to ever happen again?
I hope so. I want crazy on-screen Star Wars or Lucasfilm banner entertainment. So Strange Magic mm-hmm. 2.
Ah.
Anything related to Willow.
That would be amazing, hey?
Right? Willow. Indiana Jones, right? Anything in that realm. I want more fantasy, high fantasy.
That's funny, because Willow and Indiana Jones are both, like, sequels to those are both in production.
I know. So. Well, Willow's going to be a television show.
Right.
And Indiana Jones 5 is already in production. But, I mean, I'm just thinking of all of the titles that are recognizable yeah. through Lucasfilm. But I would kill for some high fantasy from Lucasfilm.
That would be something else. But my thought, especially in regards to this Bad Batch report,
okay,
is what are we going to get animated Star Wars in the theaters? Because I feel like if you're going to kick off that next phase,
yeah,
that could be a linchpin corner capstone to that push, because you want that animated, bigger eyes, smiling characters.
The Adventures of Grogu.
Oh my god. No, really. That
I know. I thought about it.
See that.
I mean, because they could animate him and he could be physically able to be like using his lightsaber and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And but they wouldn't need the puppet to do it, but they could make him as cute as the puppet.
It would definitely launch an entire new
yeah
element. I thought perhaps, and you may think too, viewers, that it could be something from the High Republic.
That would be cool too,
because that
has, they have that, all of that art concept stuff already done, and like the comics characters are doing
well,
the characters are really appealing, the books are doing really well. Yeah,
and that's all they've got right now, so they're testing the market.
Yeah, and that's what was their intention. They're like, we're doing world building in this situation.
Yep.
So yeah, I think Adventures of Grogu is what I would go with, because then you'd get the kids in there, you get the parents, you get the moms and the dads, but it could be his own adventure, and it wouldn't necessarily require like any current plot story stuff,
yeah,
that is in there. And then they could just make it like his own thing across the galaxy. Even if it was him and Luke, I would be fine with it. And then
it doesn't even have to be him and Luke,
but
it
could
him.
Be. And Mark Hamill could voice Luke.
Yep.
And then they're like off on their little adventures for a little while, and then he learns to speak, and then you could give him a voice, and then he could come back and have a voice inside of the show. I don't know. I'm here all week.
Yeah. Here all week until next week. I will be sitting here thinking about the adventures of animated Grogu as well. It was brilliant. And I want to know, shoot me a message and let me know what you think is the next step, because I see where this is going. I see where Bad Batch is going, and I'm excited about the end. I don't know how they're going to get there.
Yeah.
I want to know what comes after Bad Batch in an animated capacity.
I think what they could deliver successfully and would be incredibly popular would be the Old Republic redux without the video game aspects, but like telling the mythology of the Old Republic to set it up so they could go back there with live action movies. So like they're trying it out with like the High Republic, but going really far back, or the Jedi and Sith War.
Yeah.
Right. Jedi and Sith split, or the Mandalorian and Jedi War, something along those lines that happened so far in the past. If they just decided to do it one day with a movie, it would sell out.
Yeah, I agree. I like those ideas. They've already been talked about. They've already happened. Give me something new.
Adventures of Grogu.
Yeah, and that is, that's a salve to those wounds right there. Adventures of Grogu. I don't know. Do I need Ben Solo if I've got Adventures of Grogu? I don't.
But he's going to be so cute in an animated form. Like, can you imagine his big eyes? And yet, like, they'll be able to actually see him, like, moving. Yeah. The puppet is very hard to manipulate and actually make an action adventure, whereas they could make him an action adventure oriented, like, thing.
Absolutely.
Right. And they've gone back and forth, and animation and Yoda transitioning to animation has worked really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Especially when he set that tree on fire.
They just have to give him the cutest little voice with his big eyes, and he will be like consumed to death, and we will get even more Grogu stuff, which has not sold recently.
Or maybe they give Grogu the voice of like Goliath from Gargoyles.
Like little tiny body, big booming voice, low voice, and he growls. Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. I love it. All right, so to wrap up the episode, Sad Batch, Bad Batch.
What do you got?
I got a sad catch because Omega has been caught.
Oh, another catch.
I know, and I'm sad about it. I'm cheating, sort of, because it's like, that's easy.
Rad Batch.
It was Rad Batch.
Mostly because the radiation from the ion Kenjin totally burned crosshair away.
And now he's going to need a permanent like iron lung.
Guy was already scarred up.
So he's gonna go more and more Vader like, which was the metaphor that they were already going with, with the betrayal, like Anakin and stuff like that. So there you go.
Yep.
Crosshair, you are my brother. I have the high ground.
I think there'll be a rapprochement. I think that they will get back together.
Of course they will. Yeah. That's the story of Star Wars, is healing and all of those things. Most of the time, asterisks applied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
Thank you so much for checking out the show. Make sure to like and subscribe if you are on YouTube, or just subscribe if you are on your podcast app of choice.
Or you know what? Better than that, tell your friends.
Oh, hey. Yeah. We are here. Just found out about Visions being announced as far as a preview in July. I'm going to be covering that with my good friend Hammy, who has been on the show before to talk about mythology and stuff like that. Big anime fan. So that'll be a lot of fun. Unsure of when the official release date will come out. Still trying to sort out what I'm going to do for the Book of Boba Fett, but I will definitely be covering that. And I have some more cool regular What the Force episodes planned for when there's gaps, which will be fun. So
absolutely.
Looks like I'm here more.
And if you thought last week's episode was a bit off the cuff and wild and wacky, and you are not a Patreon subscriber,
I didn't actually cut all that much from...
There were things that were left
on the cutting room floor
that you can hear on the Patreon, because I don't know if I was drunk or high on life, but the things I'm willing to say in a recorded capacity continue to amaze me.
You're just a ham for the performance. That's what you're here for. Kyle, where can people find you if they are looking to comment on your audience question? If they are looking to follow you on Twitter or other things that you do online?
Hey there, friends. If you're listening to this and it's Saturday and you're on the Patreon, or it's Monday and you're on the regular feed, either way, for the next week, I am starring in Morpheus Theater's Trial by Jury, morpheustheater.ca. I am the lead. I'm playing Edwin, and he is being sued by Angelina because he said yes and proposed to marry her, and then decided, you know what, on the wedding day, yeah, you know what, I don't really want to go through it anymore. And she's suing him and taking him to court. Go to check it out. It's available here in Calgary to see live in person on selected times and days. But guess what? There's also online viewing. And once you buy the code to download the stream of it, you have 2 days to watch it. So it's a great live event, fully live shot. And I am very loud and very funny. And that's not from me directly. That's other people who have told me. We had our opening night yesterday, and I'd love it if you came and checked it out. Once again, www.morpheustheater.ca's Trial by Jury.
Globally applicable.
Indeed.
Yeah. So
anywhere.
I don't think you understand how multi-talented this man is. He is a trained tenor. You've been trained.
Yeah.
And is doing community theater with an operetta with the Gilbert and Sullivan. So if you're like, how talented is this man? That's what you can find out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're like, he not only talks about things, he not only DMs, but he also sings. And if you're willing to contribute to our conversation, feel free to DM him at Tavern Tales DM. On Twitter, or you can of course log on to whattheforce.ca, leave a comment in the contact card form,
and I will see it,
or
and I will respond,
or comment on the video on YouTube, and Ooh. We will collect these all, because I'm really enjoying having this conversation. I just struggle with bringing it back into normal episodes that we're not just covering like content. So yeah, great stuff. Thank you for checking us out, and we will be back next week. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie Claire Gould, your host. Our music is orchestral music by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Brad, Cheryl, make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, or a 5-star review on iTunes or other pod apps. It helps people find the show. Check out our other channel on YouTube or other podcast feeds, What the Fiction. You can connect with us on Twitter at WTForceShow, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, or our website, whattheforce.ca, or on our Discord. Links are in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.